guys, today I'm going to read chapter 10 called Atlanta's Race. "There are two Atlantas," she said. She herself, the huntress, and another who was noted for her speed of foot and her delight of the race. The daughter of Choenus, king of Boeotia, Atlanta of the swift foot. So proud was she of her swiftness that she made a vow to the gods that none would be her husband except the youth who won past her in the race. Youth after youth came and raced against her, but Atlanta, who grew fleeter and fleeter of foot, left each one of them far behind her. The youths who came to race were so many, and the clamor they made after defeat was so great, that her father made a law that, as he thought, would lessen their number. The law that he made was that the youth who came to race against Atlanta and who lost the race would lose his life into the bargain. After that, the youths who had care for their lives stayed away from Boeotia. Once there came a youth from far part of Greece into the country that Atlanta's father ruled over. Hippomenes was his name. He did not know of the race, but having come into the city and seeing the crowd of people, he went with them to the course. He looked upon the youths who were girded for the race, and he heard the folk say amongst themselves, "Poor youths, as mighty and high-spirited as they look, by sunset the life will be out of each of them, for Atlanta will run past them as she ran past the others." Then Hippomenes spoke to the folk in wonder, and they told him of Atlanta's race and of what would befall the youths who were defeated in it. "Unlucky youths," cried Hippomenes, "how foolish they are to try to win a bride at the price of their lives." Then, with pity in his heart, he watched the youths prepare for the race. Atlanta had not yet taken her place, as he was fearful of looking upon her. "She is a witch," he said to himself. "She must be a witch to draw so many youths to their deaths, and she, no doubt, will show in her face and figure the witch spirit." But even as he said this, Hippomenes saw Atlanta. She stood with the youths before they crouched for the first dart in the race. He saw that she was a girl of light and lovely form. Then they crouched for the race. Then the trumpeters rang out, and the youths and the maiden darted like swallows over the sand of the course. On came Atlanta, far, far ahead of the youths who had started with her. Over her bare shoulders were her hair streamed, blown backward by the wind that met her flight. Her fair neck shone, and her little feet were like flying doves. It seemed to Hippomenes, as he watched her, that there was fire in her lovely body. On and on she went, as swift as an arrow that the Scythian shoots from his bow. And as he watched the race, he was not sorry that the youths were being left behind. Rather would he have been enraged if one came near overtaking her, for now his heart was set upon winning her for his bride, and he cursed himself for not having entered the race. She passed the last goal mark, and she was given the victor wreath of flowers. Hippomenes stood and watched her, and he did not see the youths who had started with her. They had thrown themselves to the ground in their despair. wild as though he were one of the doomed youths, Hippomenes made his way through the throng and came before the black-bearded king of Boeotia. The king's brows were knit, and even when he was pronouncing doom upon the youths who had been left behind in the race, he looked upon Hippomenes, the other youth who would make the trial, and the frown became heavier upon his face. But Hippomenes saw only Atalanta. She came beside her father. The wreath was upon her head of gold, and her eyes were wide and tender. She turned her face to him, and then she knew by the wildness that was in his look that he had come to enter the race with her. Then the flush that was on her face died away, and she shook her head as if she were imploring him to go from that place. The dark-bearded king bent his brows upon him and said, "Speak, O youth, speak, and tell us what brings you here." Then cried Hippomenes, as if his whole life were bursting out with his words, "Why does this maiden, your daughter, seek an easy renown by conquering weakly youths in the race? She has not striven yet. Here stand I, one of the blood of Poseidon, the god of the sea. Should I be defeated by her in the race, then indeed might Atalanta have something to boast of." Atalanta stepped forward and said, "Do not speak of it, youth. I think that it is some god, envious of your beauty and your strength, who sent you here to strive with me and meet your doom. Ah, think of the youths who have striven with me even now. Think of the hard doom that is about to fall upon them. You venture your life in the race, but indeed I am not worthy of the price. Go hence, O stranger youth, go hence and live happily, for indeed I think that there is a maiden who loves you well." "Nay, maiden," said Hippomenes, "I will enter the race, and I will venture my life on the chance of winning you for my bride. What good will my life and my spirit be to me if they cannot win this race for me?" She drew away from him and then looked upon him no more, but bent down to fasten the sandals upon her feet. And the black-bearded king looked upon Hippomenes and said, "Face then this race tomorrow. You will be the only one who will enter it, but bethink thee of the doom that awaits at the end of it, The king said no more, and Hippomenes went from him and from Atalanta, and he came again to the place where the race had been run. He looked across the sandy course with its goal marks, and in his mind he saw again Atalanta's swift race. He would not meet doom at the hands of the king's soldiers, he knew, for his spirit would leave him with greatness of effort, and he would make to reach the goal before her. And he thought it would be well to die in that effort and on that sandy place that was so far from his own land. Even as he looked across the sandy course, now deserted by the throng, he saw one move across it, coming toward him with feet that did not seem to touch the ground. It was a woman of wonderful presence. As Hippomenes looked upon her, he knew that she was Aphrodite, the goddess of beauty and love. "Hippomenes," said the immortal goddess, "the gods are mindful of you, who are sprung from one of the gods, and I am mindful of you because of your own worth. I have come to help you in your race with Atalanta, for I would not have you slain, nor would I have that maiden go unwed. Give your greatest strength at your greatest swiftness to the race, and behold, there are wonders that will prevent the fleet-footed Atalanta from putting all her spirit into the race. Then the immortal goddess held out to Hippomenes a branch that had upon its three apples of shining gold. In Cyprus, said the goddess, there where I have come from, there is a tree on which these golden apples grow. Only I may pluck them. I have brought them to you, Hippomenes. Keep them in your girdle, and in the race you will find out what to do with them, I think. So Aphrodite said, and then she vanished, leaving the fragrance in the air and the tree shining apples in the hands of Hippomenes. Long he looked upon their brightness. They were beside him that night, and then he arose in the dawn. He put them in his girdle. Then, before the throng, he went to the place of the race. Then, when he showed himself beside Atalanta, all around the course were silent, for they all admired Hippomenes for his beauty and for the spirit that was in his face. They were silent out of compassion, for they knew the doom that befell the youths who raced with Atalanta. And now Schoenius, the black-bearded king, stood up, and he spoke to the throng, saying, "Hear me all, both young and old. This youth Hippomenes seeks to win the race for my daughter, winning her for his bride. Now if he be victorious and escape death, I will give him my dear child Atalanta, and many fleet horses besides gifts from me, and in honor he shall go back to his native land. But if he fails the race, then he will have to share the doom that has been meted out of the other youths who race with Atalanta, hoping to win her for a bride." Then Hippomenes and Atalanta crouched for the start. Trumpets were sounded, and they darted off. Side by side were Atalanta and Hippomenes went. Her flying hair touched his breast, and it seemed to him that they were skimming the sandy course as if they were swallows. But then Atalanta began to draw away from him. He saw her ahead of him, and then he began to hear the words of cheer that came from the throng. "Bend to the race, Hippomenes. Go on, go on. Use your strength to the utmost." He bent himself to the race, but further and further from him Atalanta drew. Then it seemed to him that she checked her swiftness a little and to look back at him. He grinned on her a little, and then his hand touched the apples that were in his girdle. As it touched them, it came into his mind what to do with the apples. He was not far from her now, but already her swiftness was drawing her further and further away. He took one of the apples into his hand and tossed it into the air so that it fell on the track before her. Atalanta saw the shining apple. She checked her speed and stopped in the race to pick it up. And as she stooped, Hippomenes darted past her and went flying toward the goal that now was within his sight. But soon she was beside him again. He looked and he saw the goal marks were far, far ahead of him. Atalanta was flying hair past him and drew away and away from him, and had not speed to gain upon her now, he thought. So he put his strength into his hand, and he flung the second of the shining apples. The apple rolled before her and rolled off the course. Atalanta turned off the course, stooped, and picked up the apple. Then did Hippomenes draw all his spirit into his breast as he raced on. He was now nearer to the goal than she was, but he knew that she was behind him, going lightly where he went heavily. And then she was beside him, and then she went past him. She paused in her speed for a moment, and she looked back on him. As he raced on, his chest seemed weighted down, and his throat was crackling dry. The goal marks were far, far away still, but Atlanta was nearing them. He took the last of the golden apples into his hand. Perhaps she was now so far that the strength of his throw would not be great enough to bring the apple before her. But with all the strength he could put into his hand, he flung the apple. It struck the course before her feet, and it went bounding wide. Atlanta served in her race and followed where the apple went. Epomenes marveled at that he had been able to fling it so far. He saw Atlanta stoop to pick the apple, and he bounded on. And then, although his strength was failing, he saw the goal marks near him. He set his feet between them, and then fell down on the ground. The attendants raised him up and put the victor's wreath upon his head. The concourse of the people shouted with joy to see him victor, but he looked around for Atlanta, and he saw her standing there with the golden apples in her hands. "He has won," he heard her say, "and I have not to hate myself for bringing a doom upon him. Gladly, gladly do I give up the race, and glad am I that it is this youth who has won the victory from me." She took his hand and brought him before the king. Then Chionius, in the sight of all the rejoicing people, gave Atlanta to Epomenes for his bride, and he bestowed upon him also a great gift of horses. With his dear and hard-won bride, Epomenes went to his own country, and the apples that he had brought with her, the golden apples of Aphrodite, were reverenced by the people. So that was chapter 10. Bye, guys. See you later. See you later. See you later. See ya. See ya later. Bye, guys.